April 26th Committee on Rules. We're starting earlier than normal. We wanted to get Mackenzie back to school as quickly as possible. Apparently, not all of our senators got notice. So we will be officially in subcommittee for the purpose of hearing the number of measures that we have today. I'm going to open a public hearing on HJR 27 and invite Representative Garrard and Senator Whitsitt forward. Good morning and welcome to your Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you.
I need some of Representative Butler's early morning tea, I think.
Thank you, Chair Brown and committee members. For the record, I'm Senator Doug Whitsitt from Senate District 28. The values of the climate community are the same today as they were 100 years ago. We appreciate hard work, and we come together in times of need and crisis. We are dedicated to both nature and to the growth of our community. In Klamath Falls, we embrace our rural heritage. Our residents possess a rich history of service to their country and their community. Much of our farmland was homesteaded by World War I and World War II veterans, patriots whose families continue to farm our fertile soils. We have lost sons and daughters in many American wars, including the current campaign in Iraq. We continue to be a patriotic community, proud to be Americans and proud to be Oregonians. Klamath Falls is an excellent representation of a blend of science and nature coming together to both better our citizens and to encourage respect for our natural resources. We are dedicated to preserving our way of life, ranching, farming, timber harvest, and enjoying and preserving the natural beauty of our area. When this rural lifestyle is threatened, we forget our differences and unite to work for the survival of our communities. Our citizens are grateful that our legislature is considering honoring us in our centennial year. But please remember, HJR 27 does not just acknowledge the success of Klamath Falls. By extension, it recognizes the timeless values of all hardworking rural Oregonians. Please join me in support of this legislation. And thank you.
Thank you. Representative
Gregg. Thank you, Chair Brown, and good morning, committee and chair. When the Legislative Assembly created Klamath County back in 1882, it designated Linkville as the county seat, although it gave the voters the chance to select some other site at the 1884 general election. Linkville was renamed Klamath Falls in 1893.
Representative Grant, I'm sorry, I need to have you identify yourself for the record.
I apologize, Chair. Representative Bill Garrard, District 56, Klamath Falls. Klamath Falls became the official name of Klamath Falls from Linkville in 1893, and it received its official charter in July of 1905. 100 years ago, in July of this year. This resolution honors and commemorates the struggles, the successes that Klamath Falls has experienced over the past 100 years, and we certainly would appreciate your support.
Great. Questions for both of you. Is there going to be a celebration in Klamath Falls sometime this summer? Is there a big party that we can all come down and celebrate, help you celebrate?
Yes, ma'am, July 23rd through the 25th, and certainly all members of this legislative body will be invited to attend.
Unless, of course, we're in session.
I didn't even think about that.
Okay. But any other questions for the panel?
No.
Great. Thanks for bringing this resolution before us. As soon as we have a quorum, if we do get a quorum this morning, I'm sure we'll move into work session.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for joining us. Close the public hearing on HJR 27. Next up, I'm going to open a hearing on HJR 3 and have the committee administrator tell us a little bit about the bill. While Representative Brown and Mackenzie Smith come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. HJR 3 designates the Meta Sequoia as the official state fossil of Oregon. My understanding is that Oregon is the only western state that does not have an official fossil, so hopefully by the end of the meeting we'll have one.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to the two of you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Alan Brown from House District 10. And today, this morning, I'm here to talk to you about the Meta Sequoia fossil. The Meta Sequoia was put forward for the legislature's consideration as the state fossil for the Oregon Paleo Lands Institute Board, comprised of Oregonians from across the state. The Meta Sequoia can be found in several sites in central and eastern Oregon. So anyone who wishes to have one can. This is not true of other state fossils. Naming the state fossil provides Oregon with a unique geological and paleo resource, which can be used to promote tourism and economic development for these regions. Similar efforts with Oregon's state rock, the Thunderbird, and the state mineral, the Sunstone. No other state in the country has selected the Meta Sequoia as a state fossil. And interestingly, although Oregon's Meta Sequoia fossils are 5 to 25 million years old, Meta Sequoia plants are available today, known as the Dawn Redwood. And I believe there's one across the street at Willamette University. The selection of the Meta Sequoia will be saluted to... A salute to the state's forest heritage, and there are no hard costs, funding impacts with this designation. The state of Oregon will merely include the approved designated materials such as the Oregon Blue Book and the state website, Oregon.gov, as they are updated. And I'm going to now turn it over to the real expert, Mackenzie Smith.
Good morning. My name is Mackenzie Smith. I'm a fifth grader at Templeton Elementary School in Tigard. I have been interested in fossils ever since I can remember. My parents have taken me to museums, rock and mineral displays, dig sites, and lectures. I have found fossils and had them identified. I plan to be a paleontologist when I grow up. Did you know that Oregon is the only Western state that does not have a state fossil? I would like to see the Meta Sequoia become Oregon's state fossil because it is plentiful and relates to Oregon's rich timber history. When you think about it, Oregon's history in timber goes back to prehistoric times. The Dawn Redwood, or Meta Sequoia, is a really unique tree. It loses its leaves or needles in the fall, just like a deciduous tree. Of course, they come back again in the spring. I like the tree as well as the fossil. I even had one planted near our home. A couple of years ago, I dug in the town a fossil. It was great. I found a number of fossils, and Guy helped me identify them. Many of the students at my school have learned about the Meta Sequoia, especially third and fifth graders. I had a display at the Tigard Library about 2 months earlier this year. A number of students and community members saw the display and a small specimen of the Meta Sequoia. According to the librarians, the display was well received. I currently have an exhibit at the Tualatin and City Hall. How does designating the Meta Sequoia affect you? Once the Meta Sequoia is designated as Oregon's state fossil, it could have a positive impact on Oregon's economy, especially travel and tourism. People want to see Oregon State Fossil in its native area. Renewed interest in Oregon's Paleo Pass is exciting and interesting. And the best part, there's no cost to the taxpayer. Thank you for considering the Meta Sequoia as Oregon's official state fossil.
Thank you. Now, Mackenzie will be glad to answer your
questions. Thank you, Representative Brown. Mackenzie, I'm curious, did you just find out about this bill, or did you ask that it be drafted?
Well, Guy DeTorres asked for it to be drafted, but I'm kind of a helper in this. I have testified in a joint... Environmental Committee on the House side.
Okay.
And Mackenzie, excuse me.
Proceed, Representative Brown.
Mackenzie sat on the House floor with me, and my floor speech that day was actually Mackenzie's speech because he could do a far better job than I could.
And Mackenzie, do you have these fossils at your house? Did you bring any to show us this morning?
Yes, I do have one. with me, and I have more at my house, but
why don't you go ahead and come forward and show it to us? That'd be great.
Thank you. This is a mess of
Any other questions? Senator Ringo.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that was the best testimony I've heard this session. That was very compelling.
Excellent.
I appreciate that. But I had a question, Mackenzie. Have you been to that rock museum off Highway 26?
Is that the Rice Museum?
Yeah,
I've been there.
Yeah, it's a great museum, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was the best testimony I've heard in this committee. That was really good.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mackenzie or Representative Brown? We really appreciate you bringing this issue. And since there's a quorum, if I can get some eye votes on the committee, Mackenzie will probably move this resolution to the
chair.
Senator Atkinson.
Not to interrupt, but is the building on fire?
I don't believe so, Senator Atkinson. Hopefully, if it was the
fireman outside our window on a big train.
Exercise.
I think it's Fire Day, it's Fireman's Day, Firefighter's
So you would
Day.
Tell us if the building's on fire.
Would I would hope that the right, exactly. I would hope that the alarm would be ringing if the building were on fire. That's very cool.
Check it out. There's two.
You see it?
This is cool.
You guys okay? All right, we're going to close the. No.
I will be.
Close the public hearing, HDR 3. Open a work session on HDR 3. Is there a motion?
Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I enthusiastically move HDR 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Ringo moves HDR 3 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Senator Farinelli.
Madam Chair. I will be voting yes in committee and no on the floor.
And could you please explain to the committee and to Mackenzie why you'll be voting no on the floor?
I can. I'm voting yes on the committee so that the bill will move forward, so that other members may have an opportunity to vote on the bill. In my career as a legislator, I think I've been partially responsible for designating milk as the state drink. I think every session we designate something, some rock or tree or bush or animal or bird or fish. And every bill that we pass in that regard costs the state taxpayers about $10,000 for hearing and printing. It will, in fact, move forward. I don't doubt that the members of the Legislative Assembly will adopt the bill. But, Madam Chair, if it were up to me, I think that I would designate the state fossil as State Representative Bill Markham. He would be my choice for the state fossil. So I will be voting aye on committee and reserve my right to vote no on the floor, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Farinelli. And you probably missed some of McKenzie's testimony, but he is confident that designating a state fossil will help us with tourism and economic development. Given that that's probably true, would you at all be considering willing to change your vote on the floor?
Madam Chairman, it's unlikely.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything further from the committee? Senator Ringo has moved HDR 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson.
Aye.
Senator Ringo.
Aye.
Senator Shields. Vice Chair Farioli.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Who would like to carry? Senator Atkinson, we're going to let you carry this one. And Mackenzie, if you would like to sit with Senator Atkinson on the floor, we'd love to have you join us at some point, okay?
Thank you.
Oh, but only if you can get excused from school. We have an amendment resolution. What's the sportsman bill?
It's HCR
8A.
Chair would open a hearing on HCR 8 and invite, I saw Senator Beyer here. Any other members of the legislature wishing to testify on this one. I know Representative Dahm is here on House Bill 3145. We'll get to that as quickly as possible.
That is cool.
Good morning, Senator Beyer.
Morning, Madam Chair.
Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you. I'm Roger Beyer, State Senator, District 9, to get that formality out of the way before I forget it. Here to testify on behalf of House Concurrent Resolution Number 8, A in Gross, which hopefully you all have in front of you. Representative Scott and I and others introduced this resolution in order to recognize the contribution that sportswomen and sportsmen, or I know as in this committee they refer non-gender, so I would have to just say from now on, sportspersons, the contributions they make to the state of Oregon. This resolution passed the House recently and is now here in front of you. I'm not going to read it. You can all read it yourselves. I'd just like to point out that the sportspersons in the United States refund the vast majority of conservation and wildlife habitat restoration, and that is both huntable and fishable wildlife and non-huntable and fishable wildlife. I think that's the important thing, point I like to make about this, is that most people, when they think about what sportspersons do, they think of people who go out and hunt and fish and are only concerned about the game that they hunt or fish. But we have many more species in this state and in this nation that are not huntable or fishable species, and the sportsperson's dollars also fund all of those, and I think that's the important thing to note. We pay taxes on all the excise taxes on all the gear we purchase in order to pursue those things that we enjoy doing, and those dollars is what funds the rest of the conservation movement across the United States. This is a good measure. I hope it moves forward. I think there are others here to speak to it today, and I just encourage you all to vote yes on this. And Senator Farioli, with the exception of printing, as we all know, House concurrent resolutions don't cost a thing.
Sarah Atkinson.
Senator Beyer, thank you for coming to the committee this morning. Perhaps you could give us a list of a few conservation sportsmen's clubs that you've referenced by way of example.
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, well, I'm very happy to see you here. I didn't know you ever attended committee. Sue.
Oh, okay.
Ouch.
A few of those such organizations that I am a member of, was that your question, or just some that are out there?
Some that are out there.
Well, there are many. There is the Ducks Unlimited. There is the National Wild Turkey Federation. There's the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. There's Safari Club International. Those are all national organizations. And in the state, there's also the Oregon Hunters Association. There is the Order of the Antelope. There are others, but those are the ones that come to mind instantly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions for Senator Beyer? Thank you very much, Senator Beyer. We really appreciate you bringing this very important issue.
Chairperson, I apologize.
You said chair. You did fine. You did fine. You could teach your colleagues a lesson or two. I'm going to ask that Mr. Al Elkins and is it Chair Broadfoot? Okay. Mr. Broadfoot, come on up and complete the testimony. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jared Broadfoot, here today representing the Oregon chapters of Safari Club International, SCI First for Hunters. We have brought this, asked for this legislation to be introduced, this resolution, because we want to recognize the contribution of sportsmen and sportswomen or sportspersons in the state of Oregon who spend millions of dollars each year in this state to support conservation projects. Our organization dedicates a lot of man hours, volunteer man hours, and dollars for those projects. I wanted to highlight a few of them and just to tell you some of our success stories. I think it's been about 10 years ago, and Mr. Elkins can help me with that if I'm wrong on the date, but we went together, Safari Club International, Oregon Hunters Association, several other conservation organizations, and contributed money to the Department of Fish and Wildlife that we raise at our banquets and fundraisers to transplant some Columbia white-tailed deer into Douglas County. They were then an endangered species in the state of Oregon. Subsequently, after transplanting those animals and the conservation plan that was put into effect, those animals were then delisted as an endangered species in Oregon. And yes, this past, I believe this year, will be the first year there's been a legal hunting season on those animals because there's a big enough population to do so. So we took an animal that was an endangered species in Oregon, spent some money, transplanted them, and then had them delisted as an endangered species. Across the board through the conservation organizations that Senator Atkinson was asking about, the National Wild Turkey Federation is actually faced with a problem. They are about this close. They're about 99% of the way of completing their mission as a national organization, and that is to put wild turkeys back into their original habitat throughout the United States. And they're really close to doing that. Another success story here in Oregon is in the 1930s, the cougar population in Oregon was about as low as 200 animals, and hunters and conservationists got together with the department with some fish and wildlife folks and then listed the cougar as a game species and raised that population back up today to about 5,000 animals. So we've had a history of protecting fish and wildlife and ensuring their populations and even, yes, non-huntable species such as the bald eagle, which we played a very large role in. So very proud of that. Want to make sure these folks continue to spend their money in Oregon and help out our rural economies. Lord knows the fishing season right now has had a drastic impact on the Columbia River and those businesses, but I know the Willamette River businesses are getting a lot of that business now. So these folks are very dedicated, spend their weekends and even their weeks out there working with on conservation projects. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rockfoot. Mr. Elkins.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Chair, members of the Senate Rules Committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I passed out, attached to my testimony, the Oregon Hunters Association 2004 Wildlife and Habitat Improvement Projects. These are projects that we do on an annual basis. And last year, we, with a workforce of 1,244 volunteers, we worked for more than 13,400 documented hours on 72 statewide projects. This affected over in Oregon over 103,000 acres and included 32 different wild management units, which totaled in actual cash materials over $203,000 of our own money. This is just 1 year snapshot, and we basically do this on an annual basis every year.
Okay.
On the next to the last paragraph in my testimony, Madam Chair, is a list of the contributions that we do statewide in terms of tax dollars, all hunters and fishers in the state. That concludes my testimony. We encourage you to pass HCR 8. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the panel? Thank you very much. Anybody else wishing to testify on SCR 8? Close the public hearing, open the work session on HCR 8.
Madam Chair, I'd move the current resolution to the floor with a due adopt recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved HCR 8 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chairman, I'll be issuing a courtesy vote on all of the resolutions today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next time we'll bring you donuts. would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson.
Yes. Yes.
Senator Ringo. Senator Shields. Vice Chair Ferrioli.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye.
Senator Atkinson, will you be willing to carry?
We'd
like Senator Baya, of course. Thank you very much. Next up, I'd like to hear HCR 16. Senator Lim?
Represent.
Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. It's Representative Lim. Used to be Senator Lim, right?
Used to be.
Okay.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, Brown, and members of the committee, and once a senator is a lifetime senator, so yeah, you can call me senator anytime if you want to. my name is John Lin, a state representative from District 50, which is Gresham area. And I just want to thank you for hearing HJR 16. which designates Lunar Day as Oregon Asians American Day. Asian Americans number more than 9.1 million in U.S. and represent more than 30 different nationalities and ethnic groups. There are currently about 107,000 Asian Americans living in Oregon. From the early 1800s to the 21st century, Asian and Pacific people have played a vital role in the development of the United States, and Oregon made a lasting contribution in all elements of American society: science, literature, art, music, education, information technology, religion, politics, and medical discoveries, and more. Most of the first Chinese immigrants arrived in the United States during the California Gold Rush and were then recruited as a major source of labor in the economic development of the Western frontier. With the passage of the Chinese Exclusion Act, 1882, Congress restricted the immigration of Chinese laborers and prohibited Chinese immigrants already in this country from becoming American citizens. Driven by sustained immigration and the refugee resettlement during 1970s and 80s, Asian Americans have emerged as the nation's fastest growing group in America and also in our state. During the first two decades of the 20th century, Japanese immigrants were able to move to the United States without any restrictions. However, in 1923, in the case of Ozawa versus United States, Supreme Court ruled Japanese were ineligible for naturalization. This ruling led to the Immigration Act of 1924, which virtually prohibited Japanese immigration. Once again, Asian refugees and immigrants share many experiences in common with other immigrants, such as language barrier, cultural shock, racial discrimination, and the challenge of starting new lives. The value of work, family responsibility, generational change, community development, and investment in education is common among most, if not all, Asian Americans and recent immigrants. I think this is SJR 16 simply recognizing as an Asian Americans the importance of their contribution and designating Lunar Day as an Asian American Day. I do appreciate hearing this bill, and hopefully that we have a work session to pass out this bill. This is the recognizing Asian Americans' importance in our state and in our country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Lim. Any questions? I don't think I see any. Thanks very much for bringing this and your very important historical testimony.
Thank you very much.
Carol Suzuki. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Chair Brown and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. For the record, my name is Carol Suzuki, and I'm a member of the Commission on Asian Affairs. I'm here in support of HJR 16. And while I am Asian, Japanese American, I support the concept of recognizing the Lunar New Year as Asian American Day in Oregon. In modern Japan and here in the United States, we celebrate the New Year on January 1st, whereas in other parts of the country, it depends on the lunar calendar. So I believe that the celebration of the Lunar New Year is the single most important holiday for Asians, regardless of where it's celebrated, as it varies greatly from culture to culture. It's a time for renewal, family gatherings, eating rich and symbolic foods, and paying respect to your ancestors and elders. Also, what you do and how you act and treat others during this period is crucial in determining how the rest of your year will go. Oftentimes, before New Year's, my mother would remind me not to fight with my sister so that we would get along for the rest of the year. Sometimes that worked. So, also in my family, in the days following Christmas, we would clean the house from top to bottom and prepare traditional foods that represented things like prosperity and hard work, good luck, and fertility. And then at midnight, we would open the doors on the north and south sides of our house to allow the old or the bad spirits to be swept out and the good wishes for the next year to flow in. So that's how we celebrated New Year's. But annually, I also attend and celebrate the Lunar New Year with my friends in the Korean, Vietnamese, Chinese, and other cultures as well. So I would encourage you to pass HJR 16. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Suzuki. Any questions? Appreciate you joining us this morning. With that, anybody else wishing to testify on HJR 16? Close the public hearing, open a work session. The chair would move HJR 16 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? I understand, Senator Farioli, your vote is a courtesy vote. We appreciate your courtesy vote. Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. The chair will carry. Next step, I want to go back to HJR 27, the commemorating 100th anniversary of Klamath Falls. The chair would open a work session on HJR 27. Any discussion? Any objection to moving HJR 27 to the Senate floor? Hearing and seeing none, it's so ordered, and Senator Whitsitt will carry HJR 27. Next up, House Bill 3145, Representative Dallum, come on forward. I'm sorry to keep you waiting.
Thank you very much, Chair Brown and committee, for your indulgence. As a freshman legislature, before we proceed, what is the courtesy vote, Chairman Brown?
Well, Representative Dallum, for different folks, it's different strokes, but I think for Senator Farioli, he's willing to give it a courtesy vote to get it to the Senate floor, and likely will be a no vote on the Senate floor. Senator Farioli.
Just for the record, the chair would have a constitutional problem here this morning where I vote no on these bills. It's well within your capability to contact two of the other members who may be otherwise engaged, or one who may in fact be ill. We could also bring the president up to vote a bill out to the Senate floor, all of which would be an unnecessary exercise and expenditure of energy. So I'm happy to vote on the committee to move the bills to the floor.
I'm sure, Chairman Don, you can see my freshman year showing up. I would never have asked had I known the answer was so detailed. Thank you very much.
And we appreciate Senator Farioli's willingness to provide us with courtesy so we don't have to go screaming through the halls to get our votes. So.
Although, Madam Chair, it is entertaining.
You go screaming through the halls or screaming through the Senate floor. Representative Dallum, tell us about your little House bill that you have in front of us.
Yes, I have House Bill 3145. And I would like to, the House has a Committee on Information Management and Technology, and we have been shepherding two pieces through the legislative process. One is CINIC, which would bring IT into one shed. The building is in progress, planning is underway, and we think we're on our way to becoming quicker, faster, and smarter with information technology. The other area which concerns us deeply is security. House Bill 3145 addresses the issue of security. I might tell you how the bill came about. We brought in several agencies. In fact, we brought in, I think it was six agencies to talk about the move to CINIC and the move and security. In that time, we found that state agencies have various levels of IT security. So we put together a meeting on just that. We started with the Secretary of State's office, and they told us what they were doing for security. And then we went to the Treasurer's office, and I will say that the Office of the Treasurer was a model of how security should be handled by a state agency. We then brought in the Department of Administrative Services and asked them how they would administer a security program. We then brought in an outside IT specialist that does nothing but delve into security issues. The outside specialist told us that our state security system is a little sieve-like. We then started back down the chain in that same meeting and talked about a what-if situation. What if we did this in a bill? What if we did this? What if we did this? The outside security expert told us that we were on the verge of something that might close the holes in our or the gaps in our security problems. We then heard from Department of Administrative Services. They told us that they were capable of administering the program down to Treasury. They concurred that this program had validity, and then the Secretary of State. All agreed. I used a priority bill. That's why there's a single name on it. Drafted up a security measure, and away we went. House Bill 3145 sailed along, came out of the House. I believe the vote was close to 58-2 and 2 excused. House Bill 3145 establishes responsibility, and it establishes standards for security. It standardizes our security systems. It allows for a rapid response. It is a good bill. It's not a perfect bill. If there were problems with this, I'm sure that we could revisit this issue over the interim, but right now we have a security problem. It must be addressed. I cannot convey the urgency to you that I feel for closing the hole in state security when it comes to IT. Our agencies are in all stages of secure, from very, very insecure to a model program. I ask that you support House Bill 3145 and send it out onto the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. I appreciate your patience, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate your answering my question.
Thank
Do you have
you.
Any questions? I'd be pleased to answer them.
Sir,
are we going to let them go unscathed before the Senate Rules Committee?
Yes, you are.
Senator. Are we going to let them go unscathed?
I'm sure you can manage to come up with an interesting question for Representative Dowell.
We just heard testimony in HJR 3, and I looked at the chair, so now I have to carry the state fossil.
Mm-hmm.
What is the state flower?
I don't know for sure what the state flower is, but it should be the rose.
It's the Oregon grape.
The grape.
What is the state bird, Representative?
The bird is the meadowlark.
Meadowlark.
Western meadowlark.
Western meadowlark.
That's
whatever.
Good.
Hold on, don't whatever.
What is the state mushroom? Representative Portobello is listening online right now. It's a what?
Portobello.
I feel like I'm on Truth or Consequences here.
You better call a Lifeline. Thank you.
What is the state mushroom?
Thank you very much. If you had any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Representative Merkley.
I think, Representative Dom, that we have no questions that are relevant to the bill this morning.
These are humane.
We appreciate you bringing this issue before us. Next up, Mr. Don Fleming. Anybody else wishing to testify in support of the bill? I have at least four folks opposed. Welcome, and good morning.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Don Fleming. I'm the state CIO. I report to Lori Warner, who's the acting director of the Department of Administrative Services. And I'm here to support HB 3145. Try not to repeat what Representative Dowell went through, but in the past, the security issues have been addressed on an agency-by-agency basis in the state. And recently, we performed what they call a comprehensive vulnerability assessment, which is to get a factual study to tell us really where we are across the state and whether or not we were okay, or whether we had a risk exposure that was not acceptable. And as a result of that study, we decided that we needed to take actions to strengthen the security program within the state. And we also decided that we needed to approach security from an enterprise point of view, where the enterprise strategy is developed in collaboration with the other agencies. And in fact, there was a letter that was signed by the 12 largest agency directors that sit on the senior governing board that supported this approach. And in fact, the funding, some fairly aggressive funding to begin strengthening the program. So I want to stress that the enterprise program is not developed by DAS in a clause that is developed in extensive collaboration with the other agencies, and that the agency efforts and plans then occur within the framework of that security plan. The bill itself provides the additional statutory authority that we believe is necessary to create an effective enterprise security program. As Representative Dowling indicated, there is a sense of urgency relative to the implementation of that program, and there will be additional rulemaking required in order for the statute to go into effect and be effective in producing the program. I believe it is a common sense law that provides the authority and the framework for developing the enterprise program. Since you have reviewed the law itself, I won't go through the details of it other than to say a couple of things that the DAS is then responsible for developing an enterprise security plan and coordinating enterprise programs with other entities, including the federal government. We will develop an enterprise incident response program, which basically is a reactive component of our strategy that says that that we do expect to be successfully attacked in the future, and we need some capability to react to those attacks so that we can minimize the disruption to the state. One of the issues of debate and discussion that did occur in the hearings that Representative Dowling had concerned vulnerability assessments, which provide the factual basis for developing the security plan, in fact, the one that we're pursuing right now. And the bill does centralize responsibility for performing those vulnerability assessments in DAS, and you need to understand that that's appropriate because the assessments look like attacks. So if everybody is unilaterally performing these kinds of assessments, it would in fact diminish and degrade the defenses of the state. And given the condition of some of the systems connected to the network, it also could be very disruptive to the systems that support the business processes of the state. The agencies in this new arrangement maintain considerable responsibility for participating in formulating the enterprise plan and also developing agency-specific security actions based on the enterprise plan. So that's my testimony brief, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions, Mr. Fleming? Mr. Fleming, I know that I've got folks signed up
yes.
from higher education expressing concern about this measure. Could you attempt to address their concerns?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, I actually support some of the concerns that higher ed has. I'd like to just briefly explain why. I worked before I came here for 4 years at Brookhaven National Lab, which is a research facility, and in some respects it's very similar to the university system. And if you look at the university system, they are a major component, which is a research mission. And then in order for them to perform that research mission, they have to interact on a worldwide basis and very collaboratively with other institutions in order for them to conduct their research. That collaborative, extensive collaborative process goes well beyond anything else that the state requires, mainline state, and requires an openness that the rest of the state would not need, and that creates complications with putting in a security program, which involves restricting access. Secondly, the research mission of the university also requires them to utilize advanced computer technology well beyond the administrative kind of pedestrian requirement that the administrative needs of the rest of the state bureaucracy requires. And because of that, the availability of technology in the security area, even to try to protect this sort of investment, is very limited. And so there are complications with regard to providing adequate security over some of the research computing facilities that the university would naturally utilize. And lastly, there's a group of users associated with the university that are extremely bright, creative, and very computer literate called the student body, which can represent certain challenges to the security system. And so what I would like to propose, and we've not really reached an agreement here over this, but what I would like to propose is I do support the university's concerns about this thing being applied as a blanket to them. I also, though, believe that through the administrative rule process that we can work out the appropriate exceptions. I would like to retain the university system's involvement in it because I think they bring leading edge technology, and they can function as a lab for the rest of the state, and there's an awful lot of smart people in the university system that we could use as part of the planning process. But I do recognize and I do agree with their concerns. It's my opinion that we can address most of them, if not all of them, through the administrative rule process.
Thank you, Mr. Fahmy. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate it if you'd hang out. There's some other folks wishing to testify against the bill. So, Mr. Pope, Ms. Strait.
Lucas might address this bill, is she?
Good morning and welcome
to your Senate Rules Committee.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Whoever wants to go first.
Okay. For the record, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ronald Pope. I'm the Chief Information Officer for Treasury. I'd like to go on record as opposing H.R. 3145 in its present form. We feel that the bill is too broad in its reach. It makes all agencies in the executive branch subject to DAS authority with respect to anything related to security of computers. As Representative Dallum has mentioned this morning, Treasury has been seen as the model of how security should be handled, and we feel that this bill dilutes our ability and restricts our ability to continue forward in putting in security measures that we feel are unique to Treasury and we feel that this bill places too much authority again with DAS, and we understand that this bill grew out of the need to centralize security authority for the scenic project. We also feel that it's a reaction to the security assessment results related to the state's information system conducted last year. Treasury also had an independent assessment done of its security systems, and we fared very high in that assessment. Our rating was a 7.6. And anything above a 6 is rated very good, and we feel that we can continue on to support security of Treasury and enhance those systems moving forward. However, with this bill, we feel that our systems would be jeopardized by having to share information of a security nature with DAS in order that they can do the monitoring and the assessments that they would like to do on a statewide basis. So for those reasons, we oppose the bill in its present form.
Mr. Pope, if you were excluded from the bill, would that solve your concerns?
That would address my concerns. It would.
Yeah.
We are very eager to work with Don and through the CIO Council, certainly, and through the State Security Council, which we are members of, and work with DAS to create security standards for the state.
Thank you.
Yes.
Ms. Strait.
Yes, for the record, I'm Jean Strait, and I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Secretary of State's office. And we're here today. In concept, we think the bill is good, but we agree with Treasury that it's too wide-sweeping and gives Department of Administrative Services too much power over our systems.
Ms. Strait, could you talk to me about your office's security record? I mean, the Treasury obviously has an exemplary record in terms of their systems being secure.
Mm-hmm.
Is that same true for the Secretary of State's office?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate you being here this morning. We're going to probably have you meet with Mr. Fleming and Representative Dallum, and we'd like to see whether DAS is willing to address your concerns in an appropriate manner. Okay?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next up, Mr. Peterson, Mr. Gregory.
Good morning and welcome to Senate Rules.
Yes, good morning.
Madam Chair and distinguished members of the Rules Committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Pedersen, Chief Information Officer for the Oregon University System, as well as Oregon State University. As CIO, I have various system and OSU campus-specific responsibilities, all related to information services. With me today is Mark Gregory, my peer from PSU, and he's here as, in a sense, as my expert witness. He is my weakness. He goes much deeper technically. And if you have technical questions, I'll rely on Mark to elaborate on what I share with you or answer those questions.
Mr. Peterson, with all due respect, I think you're safe with this particular committee. I could be surprised, but I think you're safe.
Good. The Oregon University System shares your concerns and agrees that maintaining appropriate information security should be a top concern in state government as well as higher education. We applaud the Legislature Department of Administrative Service for their focus on this topic. We share your concern with respect to the security of information technology systems. On a personal note, as the state's first CIO from 94 to 97, I have great respect and support for the work being done in DAS IRMD. Protecting the technology interests of state government is not an easy task. However, 3145 asks a lot of DAS IRMD, especially when it comes to proposed responsibilities of protecting information systems in higher education. One of the things I heard from higher education when I was state CIO is that higher ed was different and unique from executive agencies and state government. In my tenure as state CIO, I finally acknowledged that. After 8 years in higher education, I appreciate that even more. There are significant differences, and we could go on for quite a while in those. I'll touch on a few. And I think Don Fleming helped me previously. We have residence halls. Those are student homes, and students behave as if they're in their homes. And if you applied the state government agency security standards, we would have a mess in our student housing, and I think state networks would have trouble understanding some of the traffic. We have very high bandwidth. At OSU, I'll use an example. We consistently have 400 megabits, that's millions of bits per second, of sustained traffic going off campus at peak, even up to a gigabit. This level of bandwidth challenges the standard security tools that are out today, and the software of much higher investment would have to be envisioned to take care of that kind of load. We also have research activity that's very non-standard, legitimate network activity that would look suspicious to standard security tools. I've attached one there from Planet Lab, which several of our faculty members do global collaboration. Our existing intrusion detection equipment flags that as a major compromise. When we're looking at it locally, we quickly can determine it's legitimate traffic and it does not disrupt the research activity. And also, Don touched on our culture of openness. There's a significant resistance to standard security approaches in higher ed based primarily on our desire to share information and knowledge. It's one of the true missions we have in higher education. The bill is currently written would treat all information as something to be secured and protected rather than shared. In practical terms, it may result in excessive efforts to secure non-sensitive data, which would seriously be questioned by our administration and faculty. I've discussed this with Mike Fries, the deputy CIO, our concerns, and suggest we take some time to further discuss in detail how we can work together to support the legislation and have it work for Oregon University System. He's been approachable on this subject, as well as Don Fleming. I'm confident we can work something out that's equitable. Giving them sole responsibility under Section 1 for Items 3 through 7 appears to be a Herculean effort in state government alone, let alone the higher education networks and system. In summary, it's not an easy problem. We appreciate the committee wrestling with this vexing issue. While we appreciate the challenges confronting our colleagues at DAS IRMD, we encourage you to give us more time to work this out. The DAS IRMD and bill sponsor, we want to sit down and see if there are alternatives where we can remain accountable for securing our systems but not overly burden DAS IRMD or OUS. Ideally, we would like to request an exemption from the legislation, but we are willing to sit down and work out whatever the committee wishes. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. And turn it over to Mark if he's got anything to add.
Very briefly, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think Kurt did an excellent job of explaining some things. Just to give you an idea of the scope.
We need your name for the record.
I'm sorry, it's Mark Gregory. I'm the Chief Information Officer of Portland State University. To give you an idea of the scope of the differences, at Portland State University, we have over 1,000 public workstations that you can walk up to and use. We have over 2,500 machines that are on our network at any one time that don't belong to the state or to the university. They belong to individuals. Those two factors alone create a whole set of challenges for a bill like this that talks about having sole responsibility for security. How do you have sole responsibility for security when you have 2,500 people in their homes using their computers that are on that network? It's challenging for us in the model that we use. We also have things like sponsored accounts and inter-university accounts where a visiting faculty member from another institution will use our systems. We do work internationally, and we also have students running many of the aspects of our IT environment. So our environment really has a lot of uniqueness, and as Kurt said, I think we need some time to work out what I think would be ideally exemption language that perhaps we could also add to that exemption language something that says how specifically we will work with DAS on security to achieve their goals and ours. Thank you.
Thank you. Question, Senator Atkinson.
What was your testimony in the House of Representatives?
I did not testify in the House of Representatives. I had a case of pneumonia and was out of work during the time that the House bill was proceeding.
Yeah, I'm just getting over it myself. Did you testify in that?
I did not.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
Could we ask for a nod from the Treasury and the
sure.
and the Secretary of State if they testified for the same thing in the House? Was your testimony the same in the House?
Mr. Pope, did you testify in front of the House Committee?
Madam Chair, no, I did not.
Okay. Ms. Deckert, why don't you come on forward? Just for the record, neither Ms. Strait nor Mr. Pope testified in the House.
Good morning, Madam
Ms.
Chair.
Deckert.
Members in the committee, sorry, I sound a little froggy.
I think you and your husband Deckert. Are spending way too much time together.
Inga Deckert with the Oregon State Treasury. No one from Treasury testified on this bill in the House, and actually the bill as it was originally drafted, we were fine with, and we didn't catch the amendments until after the fact, so that's why we're here today.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Any other questions for the panel? All right. The chair is going to close the public hearing in House Bill 3145. She would ask Mr. Fleming and Representative Dallin to meet with the interested parties, hopefully address some of the concerns raised by higher ed, and conduct analysis whether we should include the Secretary of State's office and the Treasury's office. You're going to get some time, Mr. Peterson, but not a lot. We'd like to bring this bill back next week. So we're trying to get session wrapped up, and we encourage you to work quickly to bring this matter back before the committee. Thank you all very much. We appreciate your time and energy. Is there anyone else wishing to testify in this particular bill? Seeing no hands, we're going to move into work session on the Health Services Commission. The chair would move the appointments of Catherine White, Lori Theodoro, and Dr. Kevin Olson. Any discussions on those appointments? Any objections to those appointments? Hearing and seeing none, the chair will carry those appointments. Any further business to come before the committee? All right. Thank you all for getting here early. Our schedule will be changing on a regular basis. We'll be probably meeting quite regularly starting next week. We look forward to seeing all of you more often. And on that happy note, we're adjourned.
Where's the committee party, Madam Chair?